Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Another beautiful day in North Texas. Good morning, everybody. Pat Doney from NBC5 filling in for Sean this morning on the Sean and RJ Show. And it is 7 o'clock, so you know what that means. Roy, it is time for headlines. Take it away.
That's right, sir. We got the Cowboys beginning their preparations for the Jets today out at the Star, and they'll do it knowing they'll face the team's starting quarterback, Sam Darnold, cleared to play yesterday from the mono that had sidelined him almost a month ago. As for the Cowboys, we'll have to see if Jerry's optimism is well-founded about whether or not the team's two tackles can return to practice. Lyle Collins and Tyron Smith, both hopeful, Jerry says, can make it back. Cowboys and Jets haven't met in the Meadowlands in 8 years. Kickoff at 3:25 on Sunday. Pregame gets going with RJ and Ari at 12:30.
My man. That was Sean and I's first ever pregame show that we did, the Cowboys-Jets game.
How about that?
It was at the Meadowlands.
Eight years ago.
Yeah, it was a Revis interception right on Dez. Dez had a great game. The Jets were coming off a trip to the, AFC title game or whatever. And it was a fantastic game. The Jets wound up winning it, but I'll never forget that we were on a road show that day. It was a fun week, but I do not expect this game to be anywhere near as difficult as that one was. That was a really good Jets team. This is a really bad Jets team. Yeah. At least their record is bad. Their team is not as bad as probably because they haven't had their quarterback. They are projected to win 7.5. That 7.5 games with their over under in Vegas. But still, getting Sam Darnold back makes this at least watchable.
Not to mention, one of the points Roy just pointed out, the two offensive tackles for the Cowboys. If Tyron Smith and Lyle Collins, if both of them do not play in the game, that could be a huge factor. Last week against Green Bay, the brothers Smith, from Green Bay, gave a lot of trouble to Dak in that offensive line, and that was with Collins playing most of the game. If both of them are out, it could be a little bit of an issue there. Maybe you have to change your game plan a little bit. I'm looking forward. I'm going to be at the game actually this week in beautiful New York, New Jersey, but New York, it's going to be a really fun weekend up there. And I expect it to be an awesome atmosphere. First time they've played in 8 years.
Should have good weather and it should be dark by 4:30.
Vegas, at least expecting the Cowboys to still do what they're capable of. 8.5-point favorites. They opened. Game will be broadcasted on CBS. Tony Romo, Jim Nance, and Tracy Wolfson on the call. The Dallas Stars picked up their first win of the season last night in come-from-behind fashion, upending the Washington Capitals on the road in overtime, 4-3. Roope Hintz scored his fourth goal in as many games to get the scoring started for the Stars. They scored two goals in the final period to turn a 2-1 deficit into a 3-2 advantage. Unfortunately, they saw that lead sift away when they gave up the game-tying goal just 30 seconds left in the contest. Fortunately, Tyler Seguin won it in OT 43 seconds in. Stars get their first win of the season, their first 2 points of the year. They get back to action tomorrow night, playing host to the Calgary Flames.
All right, two things really quickly. Number one, Roope Hintz is amazing. Okay, this young guy for the Stars can flat out fly. Already, as you mentioned, 4 goals this season. I think he is a star in the making.
His speed is unbelievable, man.
The combination of he and Miro Heiskanen, I think that duo, they're in their early 20s, and they have a chance to be something special for a long time. The second thing I'm going to point out to just kind of casual sports fan, hockey fans here in North Texas, the Stars know and they knew that their schedule was brutal out of the gate. So just because they're getting off to a slow start, they win the game last night, they're 1-3. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean it's not going to be a great season. They believe they're going to be contenders. Vegas believes they're going to be contenders. It hasn't been a great start overall the first 4 games, but I still expect them to be in the playoffs in the mix.
You still played Boston and the Lou, as they call it.
Exactly.
You had Detroit thrown in there, and right. It was a tough start.
Now Washington, the Capitals are good, too.
I mean, yeah, you're facing good players, good teams. You're not going to go in there and say, hey, this team should be 3-1. No, I mean, you were hoping for 2-2. That'd be a good start, but, this is still a playoff team, yep. I think, and I don't think anybody doesn't think it's a playoff team. Maybe a few do, but this is definitely a postseason team to me. Are they a title contender? Who knows? That's the thing about the NHL. Nobody knows.
There's no such thing.
There's
honestly
no such thing.
There are playoff contenders, and if you get in the playoffs, you have a chance to win it.
Exactly.
That's how it works in hockey.
You are a playoff contender if you're one of the eight teams in on each side of the bracket.
Still good for them to get off the schneid and get that win finally. 1-3 in the season. Good win.
There's a high drive deep in the air, left center field. Brindley turns and looks. It's gone. Home run. Adamas has homered again, and the Rays have a 4-0 lead.
That one hit the catwalk. Willie Adamas hitting an absolute moonshot off of Astros starter Justin Verlander, who surprisingly, lasting just 3 2/3 innings, gave up 4 earned runs, including 3 earned runs in the bottom of the first inning. Tommy Pham got the action started with a solo shot. They followed that up with a string of hits that eventually pushed 3 runs across in the first inning. As I said, Verlander lasted just 3 2/3. The Tampa Bay Rays forcing a game 7 with their 4-1 victory over the Astros last night. Forcing a game 5 there in Houston tomorrow night. Tonight, the NLCS competitors will be decided. Mike Foltynewicz of the Braves taking on Jack Flaherty of the Cardinals at 4:02 on TBS. Don't ask me why they do a start time at 0-2. Then Steven Strasburg against Walker Buehler, Nationals versus the Dodgers at 7:40.
So let's start with last night's game. This was a gutsy move by AJ Hinch to put Verlander on 3 days rest.
Wasn't gutsy.
Yes, knowing the history of pitchers in the postseason on 3 days rest, past the Bob Gibson, Sandy Koufax era, they just don't fare well.
Doesn't go well.
Yeah, it doesn't go well on 3 days rest. Their velocity is usually the same. It's their movement is different. I think it's a little overrated, but it was a gutsy move. Gutsy move, because now he has essentially burned both his game 1 and 2 starters for the next series. So if he had pitched somebody else here, he could have used Verlander or Cole in game 5 and saved one of them for game 1 of the ALCS. Now they're going to wind up going Greinke, who we know gets shelled a lot, and then they'll still be able to bring the next guys back, but still, it was a little bit of a gutsy move. It didn't work out. Now you got a game 5. Anything can happen.
Hold on. You just gave him the ALCS as if this is a done deal, too.
That's it's a done deal.
Well, it's not a done deal. And
it's Garrett Cole on the mound. It's a done deal. Well, it's a done deal. Now, the other one, the Braves are going to have to win 5 games of this series to win 3. They've already won 4 games of this series, but they're tied at 2. They have won both the games they lost. They gave them away. And as far as the Dodgers go, I'll tell you, there are things I would much rather do than be up against Steven Strasburg in a game 5.
Especially with the Dodgers' history, all the pressure that's on. Hey, they can't get it done in the postseason, all of that. The entire weight of the world hanging down, weighing down on their shoulders right now for sure. Coming up at 8:20, we're going to get into which team Rangers fans want to see win the World Series least. I think the answer might be obvious, but maybe not. There are a couple of options, unfortunately, for Rangers fans. But yeah, I think it's going to be great. You love game 5s. I mean, love, it's going to be an awesome night tonight of sports watching that.
Don't bother me. Don't bother me tonight. I'll be doing this. I'll be watching these games. It's going to be great.
Yeah, it's going to be a big night in sports. You got these two games going on, and of course, the second coming of AEW's Wednesday Night Dynamite, Troy. Thank you very much for that. Some other MLB news. Rob Manfred threatening the Oakland A's that the league could move the team to Vegas if the city doesn't drop a lawsuit currently pending against the team. The city of Oakland trying to stop Alameda County from selling a share of the Coliseum to the A's.
All right. MLB can't let this happen. Okay? They want to expand to 32 teams. Vegas is one of the expansion cities. They can't have one of their current teams take up their expansion
city.
Man,
I'm rooting for it in the same division as the Rangers. Well, I guess Vegas is still on that Pacific time, isn't it? Damn.
Vegas is still Pacific time.
Is it not Mountain? Nope. I don't know.
No, it's close enough that it's Pacific, I think. All
right. Learn your time zone map, Donnie.
Hey, look.
It is still Pacific.
If I were a betting man.
Yes, it is still Pacific time. So, like, you got to get this stadium situation worked out. First option should be keep the A's and Rays where they are, expand to Vegas and Montreal, Vegas and Indianapolis, Vegas and Nashville. That's option one.
Don't they already have the Montreal thing going with the the Rays next season?
It's up. They're going to do like a split.
They're talking about it. I don't know if they're going to be able to pull it off because the people of Tampa, they literally, they can't get out of their deal. And so the people of Tampa would have to allow it to happen essentially for it to happen.
So that's option one. Like, I can't imagine the MLB would actually want to not expand and have a current team take up Vegas.
Of course, but the stadium is a dumpster.
Of course it is.
And it's the worst stadium in pro sports by a landslide. I mean, I remember covering a Cowboys-Raiders preseason game there a few years ago. There's one elevator in the entire stadium, and the guy who manned it looked at me and said, just so you know, it's about 50-50 on whether or not you're going to get stuck in there, so I wouldn't take it anyway. I'm like, I mean, we have like hundreds of pounds of gear. What? This place, what are you talking? Sewage leaking into the A's? Come on, man.
Yeah,
terrible.
Like, they gotta get
I'm not saying they don't need to get it. You know, I would love to see them stay in Oakland. But if they're not going to build them a stadium at some point, come on.
But how about you build your own stadium? How about you use your own money and build
a
stadium?
Moneyball team is going to build a stadium?
Well, I mean, as opposed to the state that's broke.
Yeah, that's, I mean, they are broke. I'm just saying at some point, something has to be done and figured out there. And it might mean that a move to Vegas. And Vegas is interesting because Vegas is seeking out teams. They went after the Diamondbacks. They were looking at the Diamondbacks potentially making a move earlier as well.
Other news in Major League Baseball, the Angels could announce the hiring of Joe Maddon as early as today. He finished his interview earlier this week. Also, the Padres and former Rangers GM A.J. Preller reportedly doing their due diligence on Ron Washington.
Interesting.
For their managerial opening. So Ron Washington could be making his way back into the bigs after being he's been a hitting coach with the Braves.
Third base coach, too. Infield coach, all of that, too. Yeah. I mean, he was getting some love the other day during their playoff game. We'd love to see Ron get another shot, man. He's just a great guy. Had huge success here, obviously, as well.
Yeah.
And the players love him. I mean, he's a guy who I think would go into a situation like that. Young team on the rise, and the guys would be able to connect with him.
If the Angels don't hire Joe Maddon, they're foolish.
What are they doing?
They've got a 3-4 more year window of Mike Trout's Uber Prime.
Right.
Take advantage of it. Ron Washington will be good in San Diego. Who might be better, though, is Buck Showalter, who is amazing with young people. But then he wears on you becomes a horse's you-know-what. And then you bring Ron Washington in after they already have a level of discipline.
Yeah, Buck Showalter, that's who Manny Machado, the star who they just signed this past offseason, that's who he's angling, his former manager there in Baltimore. Last night, what Pat Doney and I were engaged in, what RJ Choppy refused to engage in, was the Mavericks falling in their preseason opener, 119-104 to the Oklahoma City Thunder. No Luka or Kristaps in this one, but several rotational pieces got plenty of work. Justin Jackson scored 14 points in 15 minutes on 6 of 8 shooting. Boban made his debut for the Mavericks, had a nice little 3-point jumper involved in the game yesterday, but the biggest moment or the biggest surprise perhaps came in the pregame when Steven Adams, the big man for the Oklahoma City Thunder, was asked what he thought about opening up the preseason against Boban.
Nice way to ease your way into preseason with Boban. Nice way to ease your way into
Shocked me, mate. That's what I was like. I was like, what are you doing here, mate? Are you come to watch the game? He's like, yeah, no, I'm here to play. Damn. Yeah. But yeah, so it should be a lot of work. Yeah, but I need to lift some weights or something. I wasn't prepped for this. I was prepped for all the shooters.
I just love listening to that, man. Boban was 7 points in 9 minutes, 2 of 4 shooting again. Had the three-pointer work in there as well. Steven Adams adding a three-point game to his arsenal as well. So that was fun to see. Fun little game to watch for the first half. I thought, Pat, what were your thoughts, first impressions from the Mavericks since RJ refused to engage?
Why would I engage in preseason basketball?
It's 5 minutes, that's all. It looks it's regular season, though, in the NBA, you know, for just a smidge. I know it's like second quarter basketball. It's the second team. But you got 15 minutes out of Jalen Brunson. You got 15 minutes out of Maxi Kleba. You got 15 out of, you know, Dorian Finney-Smith and Tim Hardaway.
I think that Jalen Brunson has a chance to have a really nice season. And this is something that our buddy Nick Nepik has been on for a while, and he was tweeting about it last night again. And last night, there were a few passes from Brunson to Maxi Kleba where Kleba was like throwing down monster dunks off these sweet feeds. Now it's against the guy who's going to be working, you know, doing whatever, not in the NBA, playing defense, right, in this game. But I felt great about what I saw from the two of them, and I'm really interested to see. So Jared Sandler and I have a little bet, you know, that we talked about before the season, and I think the Mavericks are going to have a better record than the Thunder. He is very confident Oklahoma City is going to be better than Dallas. This game means nothing in the grand scheme of things, but just watching the players who are actually going to play in the games this season and matter, I feel better about where I stood before. And this is all before even having Luka and Porzingis on the floor, two guys who I think are going to be on the floor tonight when they play the Pistons.
$1,000 giveaway goes down starting at 9 a.m. this morning. We give away $1,000 cash every hour until the 4 o'clock hour here on 105.3 The Fan. Listen for the keyword, then text it in, not to the Autoflex Leasing fan text, but to the number 72881. Write that number down. Text the code word to 72881, and you could be eligible to win $1,000 cash. If you text it to the fan text, you will not be eligible. 72881 is the number you need to text for the contest running all week long.
Do you know how many people are going to text right now the code word to that number because you said text the code word? People are going to take you literally. It's funny.
At 9 a.m.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, like they're going to troll. That's what they're going to do.
It's no doubt.
Well, now they're really going to do it.
I would if I was... Yeah.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Thanks, Chop. Now you're really getting a good
idea. Yeah,
bringing the attention to people, you know, people copying it there. Hey, we're going to get the latest on the Cowboys injury situation and just how hot is the seat that Jason Garrett is on right now. We'll check in with Mike Fisher. Mike Fisher, when we're back on The Fan.
All right, Pat and RJ. Troy Hughes here, live from Intercom Radio Tower, just north of downtown Dallas. And I just got the press release regarding Jalen Smith and
LaCroix, the Christian rapper.
This is his new cryotherapy company, and Jalen Smith's new cryotherapy company will open two signature locations, according to this press release that was just sent to us here at The Fan. One will be in Frisco, the other one, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Perfect.
That's, of course, his hometown. And then two future locations coming up, one in Indianapolis and the other one just down the street in Grapevine.
I think we can all know and just go ahead and just hope and cross our fingers. Please wear foot apparel when you go in, the proper footwear.
Yes.
Don't pull an Antonio Brown.
And gloves. And you want to make sure that your boys are covered up because you could get frostbite on your frostbite.
Well, thank you very much. Now, someone that has preserved himself over the years for 100 years, that would be Mike Fisher joining us right now, 105.3 The Fan, the buyersafety.com hotline. Fish, we're talking about things that are cool, but you want to talk about something hot, like a seat.
Yeah, and you guys with Jason Garrett on Monday, I know some fans were urging you to ask him, so, Jason, do you think you should be fired? And I don't know that that's appropriate. But the conversations that we've had here on The Fan with Steven and Jerry regarding the hot seat, I do think they're appropriate, and I do think the answer is yes. Boys, it's the Dallas Cowboys. The fan base thinks that Super Bowls are its birthright. Even the owner talks about the 25-year drought. Even the owner talks about the 10-year drought under Jason Garrett's reign, and ownership absolutely believes that it's built a playoff and maybe even a championship team. So at 3-2, even though you are in first place in the division, and after two straight losses to contenders, it's completely appropriate to ask if the head coach is on a hot seat of sorts. And the answer, while it doesn't mean he's getting fired in season, because that's highly unlikely, the answer is absolutely Jason Garrett is on the hot seat, and it's a loud secret at the Star, and you guys know this, so loud that when we got to Oxnard, Jerry pretended he couldn't hear the question.
Right.
Yeah, it's a hot seat, but to me, when you're in the middle of a season, the hot seat refers to you getting removed in season, right? It's not like, of course, like at the end of the year, he doesn't have a contract. That's like assumed that there's a level of expectation on him.
I guess I see what you're saying, and we can all have our own definitions of it. For me, it's about the pressure of keeping your job. But I think we can all agree that the Cowboys would have to lose to the Jets and then lose to the Eagles 1-0 and then lose the next team 1-0, at which point we would all start saying that the team isn't responding to the head coach anymore, and then you might have an in-season firing. But the reason the odds of that, and that's what Jerry told you yesterday, he said, don't bet on that. Don't put your money on that. You're going to lose it, is because this team is not going to quit on Jason Garrett. For whatever flaws his critics find in him, you can't find that one.
Right.
Those bumper stickers, those cliches, those T-shirts, those sweatshirts, fight on them, on the sleeve. IDM, it doesn't matter. All that trying to shut out the noise and just do your job. Pat, you've seen the IDM T-shirts, I know.
Yep.
These are all messages that from the outside we go, man, oh, man, that sounds something like Jason's dad or my grandpa might have said at the breakfast table in 1962, and it sure sounds kind of corny. But these players, by and large, believe in Jason Garrett's messages and believe in him. Therefore, they won't quit, thereby all but eliminating the idea of a hot seat firing in season.
All right. I don't know if you saw this story. I think it was on CBS Sports. If Jason Garrett were let go, he would be one of the shortlist candidates for the Redskins job. First of all, would he even take that? Second of all, if the Cowboys knew this, is there a chance they would re-sign him to keep him from going there?
Or some people who don't like Jason Garrett might say, maybe the Cowboys could buy his plane ticket.
There we go.
Right.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, we've heard for years, well, nobody wants to coach in Dallas. And, of course, it's turned out to be false. People do want a coach where ownership gives you every possible tool to win, including the best facilities and the like. It does seem like Washington, no matter what they do, can't find a way to turn it around. No matter what they do, you know, if you think there's been a drought in Dallas, well, it's nothing like the drought that's been in Washington. Mm-hmm. I think if Jason Garrett really got fired, I don't know if he would take a year off. That's what a lot of guys do. Yeah. You know, before he got into coaching, he thought about broadcasting and did a little work in that. So that's always easy money that you go up to Bristol 2 days a week and do something in studio there. But something in Washington would have to change besides the coach in order to get the Washington Redskins back on track to where they haven't been in decades.
You mentioned the broadcasting, Mike. It's funny. The high school football show I host on NBC5, Wingstop Inside High School Sports.
Jason, what's it called, Pat? I'm sorry, what's it called?
Wingstop Inside High School Sports, Saturday at 6:30 p.m. There we go, every week. Jason Garrett was actually an analyst on the show in the 90s when he was the backup quarterback for the Cowboys, and we actually have video of that back in the day we're going to bring back later this year. It's kind of a fun deal. But
beautiful, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was a great tie-in there. The thing is, it's interesting because you look at this team this year now, and Jalen Smith will tell you, and he did tell us after the game, that the Cowboys' defense is 2-3 against their standards this season, right? They're 3-2 is the record. I would tell you that I would have thought they would split between the Packers and Saints, maybe win one of those games, lose one of those games. So they're only about a game behind where I had them in the standings before the season began. Is the feeling from the team and from what you're gathering that they're underachieving as a group? I mean, do they feel like they're way under what they should be?
100% and to a man. And in fact, and Pat, again, we have the benefit of being in that locker room every day. You can't find an offensive lineman that thinks he's played well in the last 9 days.
True.
Can't find one. You can't find a linebacker who thinks he's played well in the last 9 days. We can stop right. Well, okay, let's go to Amari Cooper, who had 200 billion yards in one game, but needs to use that 24-hour rule, so he lets go of the fact that he should have had another 70. This would be a true view of ownership. It'd be a true view from fans and media, and it's a true view inside the building. This is an underachieving Cowboys team that has not played near well enough. And Pat, to your predictions, you might have predicted the Cowboys would lose at New Orleans before the season, but you thought they'd have Drew Brees.
Yeah, they've played pretty well with Teddy, though, and they've won some games with him as well. To me, we had him earlier in the show in our game that we played earlier, in that I had him in that upper tier now with the way they've been able to play without him, and I've always been a big Sean Payton believer. But to your point, One of the reasons they're not playing great, especially on the offensive line and at linebacker, is because of the injuries they're facing. You know, the tackles, are they going to play? I think the linebackers are being affected by Antoine Woods not being there to kind of help plug the middle, a defensive tackle. Do you have an update on those three guys? Because that's going to be huge going forward if they miss those guys.
I do. Antoine Woods, the defensive tackle, really wanted to play last week. And he was trying to tell the trainers the week before that he could play. And I think on Friday he probably did some work and was a participant at some level. And I think the trainers just thought, let's give you another week. And they do such a great job here, Britt Brown and Jim Maurer, kind of holding players back from themselves. And that's what they did with Antoine Woods. I think Tyron Smith had a good day at the Star. And I do think there's optimism about Tyron returning despite that nasty ankle injury sustained at the end of the New Orleans game.
Would you hold him out for just another week? I mean, considering the opponent?
You know what I really do? First of all, I can't afford to do considering the opponent. I've lost that privilege.
Right. Okay. I agree with you.
I've lost the considering the opponent privilege. Now let me get up 27-0 at halftime.
Yeah.
We hate to count those chickens, but if that would happen, now we've got something different. But no, when Tyron and Maurer and Britt Brown come to me as a coach and say I'm ready to play, then I trust their judgment. So I think Tyron Smith may even practice today at some level. I assume that Cameron Fleming will move over to right tackle and practice in place of Lyle Collins, but I think Lyle Collins has a chance to play with what, in the end, he might tell you is a mild knee sprain. Of course, when it's somebody else's knee, it's always mild.
Of course.
Fish, the Jets look like they're going to have their quarterback back. He was cleared to play. That makes the game a little bit more entertaining and interesting. But what about their head coach? I saw that he's on the hot seat, for crying out loud, already.
Well, and of course, Adam Gase has spent his entire professional NFL career on the hot seat, it seems like. The Jets went out and did, with all due respect to him, they did not go out and grab themselves the greatest NFL coach in the world. They got a young retread who had already failed in their own division. And his track record now, not this is all his fault. I mean, he's taken on two bad teams, it could be argued. But Adam Gase, last seven games, lost 41-17 to Minnesota, lost 17-7 to Jacksonville, lost 42-17 to Buffalo, lost 17-16 to Buffalo, lost 23-3 to Cleveland, lost 30-14 to New England, lost 31-6 to Philadelphia. In those seven games, Adam Gase's teams have four total offensive touchdowns.
Yikes.
So that's not all his fault, but that is the sort of plum position the Cowboys find themselves in at New York if they take care of business. A team under a head coach that in two separate stops in a row can't stop anybody and can't score.
What do you have on Dak?
You did a good job on Choppy on Twitter trying to fight this idea that Dak, look at Dak's record against winning teams. Remember that tweet debate you had?
Yeah, I mean, Dan Orlovsky posted a tweet that he's, what, 10-14 against teams that finish the season with winning records, and my simple retort was, look, if you're going to do that for Dak, make sure you do that for Aaron Rodgers, and you do that for Drew Brees, and you do that for, you know, Andrew Luck, all these guys who have losing records against teams with winning records.
Okay, yeah, so Dan Orlovsky is the former NFL backup quarterback, and I think it either was him or somebody else that kind of piled into this, and they wrote, since 2017, Dak is 5-9 against winning teams. Well, what do you mean since 2017? What happened in 2016?
Yeah, right.
Who allows you in your evaluation of Dak Prescott to not include the other year? It's obviously you're making numbers dance here in a way that's not fair. And then there's the context, and this is what Choppy's talking about, I think. You've got to give me the list of all 32 NFL quarterbacks and their records against winning teams before I know that 5-9 or 10-14 is bad. And it turns out 10-14 is not bad at all. Gavin Dawson passing me this note because he quickly did the research on it. There's only three active quarterbacks with winning records against winning teams.
Yeah, Brady Russell and
Brady Wilson and Roethlisberger.
Yep.
And Brady 70-40. And that one's not a surprise. We all could have guessed that.
Right.
Roethlisberger 51-39, and then Russell Wilson at 26-21 is a little over 500 against winning quarterbacks. It is not an indictment of Dak Prescott that he loses to winning teams, because that's what all of them, basically except Tom Brady, do. And the other twist here, Choppy, that you get credit for, you're always the guy when somebody says, look at Dak's great record. He's won 32 games in 3 years, whatever it is. You always like to say, well, Dak didn't win them.
Yeah, he doesn't win them. He doesn't lose them. Like, right. I don't like to use right. his record, like his win-loss record against bad, against good teams against him. And I won't use his right. his good record, you know, for him. I just, it's a team game. The right. ultimate team
you,
game.
You can't, and I don't mean you. I mean Dak Prescott's critics or analysis of his work. You can't use the record as a to be on his side as his defense one time, and then use the record a different way to attack him. The quarterback wins and losses stats doesn't change just because the side of the argument you're on changes. Dak Prescott, I don't find, you guys tell me, given the eye test, what we've seen of Dak Prescott, all these games, all this football that RJ Choppy watches, Pat and I don't watch near as much, of course.
of course,
when the Cowboys are playing a winning team, Dak Prescott does not have a particularly difficult time versus when they're playing a losing team. I'm not talking about the last five games now. I'm talking about the last 3+ years, including his rookie year, when he did fantastic things against winning teams on the road. And for somebody to try to evaluate Prescott by eliminating, by saying, well, not counting the game at Pittsburgh is rookie year.
Because that was an easy game for anybody, right?
Yeah.
How can you not count the one that is, that's the first one that pops into my mind.
Me too.
How can you not count the one that, to me, is a trademark win that proves that this theory is idiotic? Because, yeah, if you take out all the proof that the theory is idiotic, I guess the theory looks less idiotic.
Don't let facts get in the way of the story, Mike Fisher, okay? Looking forward to seeing you later at the Star, buddy. Thanks for hanging with us this morning.
Thanks, boys.
All right, coming up in just a minute, we will talk a little more about Dak Prescott. Has our confidence level changed in Dak? I haven't been with the guy since before the season began. It's been high and low. We'll break it down next on The Fan. How much has your confidence changed in Dak Prescott from August to today? A lot has changed, obviously, in the last 2 weeks. Back-to-back losses. I believe 4 interceptions thrown in the last 2 games. You know, the first couple weeks, he looked like an MVP candidate. By the way, I'm Pat Doney from NBC5, filling in for Sean this morning on the Sean and RJ show, along with the guys here. Guys, when we were talking back in August, it was a huge debate. Do you pay Dak? Is he worth being your franchise quarterback, right? Is he worth $32 million, $35
million? $75, $100 million.
After the first 3 games, it was like, here's your check. You go and fill in whatever you want, Dak, right? Is what it looked like, even though the defenses were clearly atrocious. The last 2 weeks have been not great. 2 touchdown passes, 4 interceptions. His completion percentage, not awesome, although he had a career high in yards this last week.
Yards.
I mean, it was a pretty impressive showing from a yard standpoint, 463 yards, but obviously when you're down 31-3, that's going to impact your numbers from that standpoint. So my question for you, Chop, I want to start with you. Where were you on Dak back in August? Remind me one more time. It's been a month and a half since we've hung out here in the studio. Where were you 2 weeks ago, and where are you today?
Pay him $32-33 million.
In August?
Yeah.
Okay. 2 weeks ago?
$32-33 million.
Same.
$32-33 million.
Nothing's changed.
Why would it? It's 5 games. He's now got 53 games of information. If you are going to, you know, flail around like the wind, like a flag in the wind, game to game, I think you are completely lost, and I'm glad you're not a general manager.
Yeah.
Okay? I said this in the offseason. If the first three years did not convince you Dak was the guy, then you already know that he's not the guy.
No right? chance to change your mind.
No, because you've already got 3 years of information. Now, guys can obviously take steps, sure. But you could tell, you could see signs. So if the Cowboys weren't, I said, if they didn't think he was the guy after this year, or after this past year, then they already knew. If they didn't know, then they knew. You know when the girl you've gone out on 7 dates with, whether or not there's a future there. If you don't know by that point, then you know. Like, it ain't going to work.
The assumption that he has lost money after the last two games by having a couple of interceptions thrown that were, you know, disappointing for sure. And yes, he has 6 interceptions thrown this season. He threw 8 all of last season, 13 in 2017. He only threw 4 his rookie year. So he's already surpassed the number of interceptions thrown his rookie year. But we discussed this earlier in the show today, and I want to emphasize it a little more. Cowboys fans have been begging and dying for the Cowboys offense to make its transition from the 1990s into the 2020-2019 world. This Sean McVay, Sean Payton, Andy Reid with Patrick Mahomes world, where you ask your quarterback to do more. You ask your quarterback to take chances down the field. Because as RJ, you talk about all the time with your analytics crowd, you're talking about if you want to have any chance to really be one of the contenders in an elite offense, you have to throw the ball way down the field.
Not
right?
Way down, just...
Well, I mean, more than they have in the past,
yeah,
okay?
Yeah, you got to pass the ball more, not necessarily down the field. You just got to pass
the Cowboys
it more,
have,
risks. Yeah.
Other than Seattle, the Cowboys have been more committed to running the football than any other team in the NFL. I would say since I arrived here in Dallas-Fort yeah. Worth, this is my 7th season covering the team. And this season, the offense just looks drastically different, right? Mm-hmm. Kellen Moore has come in with this new approach. There's motion. There's all sorts of shifting. They're throwing the ball down the field. I saw Amari Cooper run an out-and-up double move that I don't think I've seen a receiver run. I never saw Dez Bryant run one of those. That's not his fault. That's just the offense didn't have it in there. And what do you know? It's like a 45-yard completion where, frankly, if the ball was on the money, it would have been a long touchdown. That was in this last game against Green Bay. But with that is going to come higher risk.
Did you put the blame on Dak or Amari for that?
I think it was a combination. I think that he lost his balance a little bit, and I don't think the ball was perfect.
It wasn't perfect.
But it doesn't necessarily have to be. This goes back to the interception as well.
Yeah, it was on
this
his
is
body.
Why Amari took all of the blame after the game. And, I mean, you're talking about a career-high game for him. The best game he's had in his career, statistically, and he literally could not get past the interception that bounced off his hands, and for good reason. If you're going to be a 14, 17, 16, whatever it is, million-dollar-a-year receiver going forward, you cannot have a ball on a wide-open seam route hit you in the hands like that when it's a walk into the end zone if you just catch it, even though it's not a perfect throw, and have it bounce in the air and have Green Bay intercept that. That's a game-changing play.
It's a total game. The team put it on Amari. The coaching staff put it on Amari. Like that was a catchable ball. I know it was a little behind him, but... Patrick Mahomes makes throws like that all the time where the ball's a little bit behind guys, and they still come up with it. I mean, I'm seeing on the TV here, there's 5 different replays of throws that he's made. You've got to come up with those catches.
Okay, we have a caller on Jared is on the line on 183. Jared, what are your thoughts here on this?
I'm sorry, it's not Jared, it's Garrett. But, I was thinking... Dak is throwing the ball more now than he has in the past. I just feel like this is some growing pains, the interceptions and everything, and I feel like he'll bounce back.
Yeah, look, I look. There's definitely growing pains with quarterbacks, and everyone talks about year 4. I look at year 6. Year 6 for like quarterbacks really don't figure things out to where they are on cruise control. By year 4. Some do.
I don't even care about that. This is his first year running this style of offense where he hasn't just handed the ball off 40 times a game or whatever.
I know.
I mean, he's played 5 games in a new system where he's throwing the ball down the field, which is what Cowboys fans have wanted. His QB rating is higher than it's ever been in his career. He's throwing for about 100 yards more per game than his career high before this season. His yards per attempt, 9.4, the highest in his career. So, to me, there's going to be some growing pains that come with this, to your point, Chop. And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, okay, he had 2 bad games against 2 really good teams. The Packers' run defense is not good, but he was running for his life without Tyron Smith in the game and Lyle Collins playing through injury. And the defensive backfield, I think, in Green Bay is pretty good as well. I'm not freaking out in this situation here. I'm looking at it, and I'm saying, I expect him to bounce back this week. I think he is clearly still your guy going forward. I don't understand people who are not satisfied with what they've seen to this point because, once again, the expectations were through the floor for him when he was drafted. And here he is now in year 4, and we were talking MVP 2 weeks ago, and then he has 2 semi-rough games here going forward. I have not seen enough to make me extremely concerned. Remember, some of these interceptions are not his fault either. Okay, the one against the Redskins off the hands of Randall Cobb into – the defender's hands. This one against Amari Cooper off his receiver's hands into the defender's hands. The one that he threw to Michael Gallup, Michael Gallup got decapitated by the defensive back. Should have been off our defensive pass interference, and instead it's an interception and it doesn't get overturned.
There's, I'm sure, five others that were interceptable balls, right, that you throw. Like, there was two in the game that he threw.
But
that,
I think he threw them because he knew that there was a penalty called on the play. And he took a shot.
No.
On one of them for sure. I knew that for
one. One of them,
I felt that for sure. Yeah. He saw the flag thrown, and he's like, "I'm taking a shot now because I know it's a free play."
Right, but you know, when you see a flag thrown as a quarterback, sometimes you don't know what it is. Like sometimes you could tell that the defense is offsides or whatever. So on one of those, yes, but like on a defensive hold, it could easily be anything. You know that. Well, so, but yes, one of those was one that I think that it was a free play. But, you know, quarterbacks are going to have passes that are bad passes that don't get picked.
Yeah.
Those are – so it evens out.
Of course. It'll just seems like it hasn't really bounced his way quite as much, even close. We have Justin on the line in Dallas. Justin, your thoughts on Dak Prescott going forward?
Yeah, just kind of what you guys are talking about. I think the perception is so much different if the two balls that come off the receiver's hands that aren't picked and then the defensive holding in Green Bay, if that one's not picked, I think the perception on his stat line is significantly different if you take those balls away.
No question about it. I think it's a great point. And the reason why is I keep going back to that game really swung with two plays to me. Number one, as Justin mentioned, the catch that it wasn't the catch for Amari down the middle that bounces into the Green Bay defender's hands. If he scores a touchdown there, it's a completely different game story, I think, going forward. The second thing is when Dak took the sack in Green Bay territory toward the end of their second drive, and it took him out of field goal range on that 3rd and 7. That was a huge play, and Cam Fleming just got beat on that play, and people were trying to call that a coverage sack. I went back and watched it again 15 times on the coach's film, and to me, no, that's a play that he had nowhere to move, nowhere to go. I would have loved to have seen, and you were killing me about this in the break. We were talking about a chop. I would have loved to have seen the Cowboys on 3rd and 7 in that situation run the football.
Yeah, I'd have slapped you. I'd have slapped you across the face if I could have.
Green Bay couldn't stop the run at all. They still can't, and they're going to get run over all year long. And I would have loved to run the football on that play and say, we're going on fourth down no matter what in this circumstance, assuming they gain any yardage.
And which play was this, 3rd and 7?
The 3rd and 7 from the Green Bay about 40-yard line where Dak eventually took the sack, and it took him out of field goal range, and so they ended up having to punt. Green Bay goes down the field and scores. They're up 14-0. That was really the game complete swing, because you go from being potentially up 7-0 to down 14-0. I mean, it's going to change your entire game plan. You throw everything out the window.
What if they get, you can't run on 3rd and 7, man.
I would have set up in a setup that looked like you're throwing the ball and hand the ball to Zeke and let him do his thing. Because Green Bay's run defense is pathetic. I'm with you. I wanted to see the Cowboys throw the ball down the field more this season than they have in years past. But I think game flow has to matter. I think your opponent has to matter.
Of course it does.
Well, and that was the team that you're probably going to run the ball best against all year. Green Bay has been atrocious against the run.
They have been. And I was all for it. I'm okay with that. But on 3rd and 7? That's a bad play.
Only if you're planning on going for it on fourth down and you're in their territory. That's what I'm saying. I think you're getting at least 5 yards per carry at that point.
Who knows? I mean, you do a safe pass, you get the safe pass, you do a 5-yard pass to Witten, get it to 4th and 2. Third down runs are great at 3rd and 2. Hmm. Like at 3rd and 7, man, I think you're running a big time risk. I think 3rd and 7, honestly. That's a Dak play.
All right.
That's a
the read option,
let Dak run. That to me is an amazing play on 3rd.
I wouldn't have minded that, especially with the issues that they've had on the offensive line. So your confidence in Dak hasn't changed. My confidence in Dak hasn't changed. We're going to talk about whether or not our confidence in the Cowboys as a whole has changed going forward. Our NFL power rankings are coming up after this break.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.